Why are we here today? Why are we here and not somewhere else? Saw lots of people out doing all kinds of things today. Wonderful day to be outside. Why are we here? It reminds me of a question that I had a teacher in high school that always had us rehearse that. He would come in every morning and he had an expected response, and he would say, "Students, why are we all here?" And we were all expected to reply, "Because we're not all there, Mr. Sears." And it's funny, I think that's probably how the world and maybe even others in Christendom look at us for being here today. And I think probably most of us would say the reason we're here is because God says we're supposed to be here on this day and at this time. And that is a good answer. In fact, it's the basic point that I want to get to today. But it all goes back, everything goes back to history. The whole thing with this goes back to that time when that famous proclamation was made. That proclamation, "Let my people go." Let my people go. That phrase occurs 9 times in the Bible. And they're all in chapters 5 through 9 of Exodus. Do a search for it, and that phrase will come up, but it'll only come up in those places. But I want to go a little bit deeper than that today. So the title of my message is, "Let My People Go." But why? Question mark. And what I am going to get to, this could be sort of a subtitle. It's called Making a Statement, because Moses made a statement when he uttered those words. Making a statement about how we worship our God. So if people like titles and subtitles and that sort of thing, that's what I have for my notes here. We're here to make a statement, and that's my purpose today. I want to discover what that statement is. What was that complete statement that Moses originally stated? What was the complete phrase? Because he didn't just say, "Let my people go." Okay, but after that, he gave the rationale. And he gave the rationale in 3 parts, we might say. So my purpose today is to examine the meaning and consequences of that complete pronouncement and how it explains why we are here. And to show that we are making the same proclamation today by showing up here to celebrate the first day of unleavened bread and the initiation of the annual holy day cycle with this day. So let's start with the background on the story. We know where we're going. We know that at the end of that, the plagues came on Egypt. Moses made those proclamations. There was a back and forth, and we're going to go into some of that today. To formulate our statement, our purpose statement for being here on this particular day, the 15th day of the first month. But we're going to, with that, we know that we're going to get to eventually the Passover that's going to allow us to exit Egypt. The blood of the Lamb will be what will allow us to exit that Egypt. And we know that then we are to exit Egypt and with unleavened bread, because we're getting out in haste to get away from idolatry and sin of that. That's the end of the story. So that's covered right now. But I want to go into the background, and I'm going to be focusing primarily on just a few of those central chapters there where "Let my people go" occurs. But now let's go back to the beginning of the story. Let's go back to the background, because this is a story about Moses making that proclamation that we are repeating every time we come and observe this day. And so to just get the background quickly on this, I would like to go to Acts chapter 7. I'd like to go to Acts chapter 7 to get the entire background on Moses and the story of God's people being enslaved and needing liberation. And let's start with verse 14. Again, this is just background. This is the section known as Stephen's Apology. It's with before his stoning when he got up, and he actually went over, in a lot of ways, the entire plan of God in a encapsulated form here. So he's done a lot of the work for us on the background here. So to start with, the Israelites wound up going down to Egypt. And so look at verse 14. It says, remember Joseph was sent to Egypt, and Joseph was down there, and finally through the course of events, it says he sent for his father, Jacob. It says in verse 14, then Joseph sent and called his father, Jacob, to him, and all his kindred, 75 souls. So there they were in Egypt, but there was a promise that they would come out. So then, verse 17, but when the time came of the promise, the promise drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham. Hang on, I've got these progressive lenses. I broke my regular glasses recently, and so I grabbed the last pair before that, and the progressive lenses are in different places. So that's my explain. There we are. Okay. Okay, with time drew near, God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose which knew not Joseph, and the same dealt subtly with the kindred, with our kindred, and evil treated our young children to the end that they might not live, in which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up, and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and in deeds. So Moses became a mighty man in Egypt. And we can read this in various other sources. Actually, Exodus doesn't tell us much about that time period, but there are other sources like Josephus that do. And so Stephen makes allusion to that here. And then verse 24, and seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that he was oppressed and smote the Egyptians. And this is a pivotal verse here, verse 25. For he, Moses, supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they didn't understand. So Moses thought that he would have been raised up and put in that position in Pharaoh's household to deliver them. He already kind of got the message then. He knew that was supposed to be his job. But then, of course, things went a little differently than what he had planned. Okay, with that, it says, down to verse 29, because of this was discovered, it says he had to flee. Then Moses fled at this saying and was a stranger in the land of Midian. Okay. And when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai an angel of the Lord in a flame of fire in a bush. Okay, so there's our background. Now I would like to go back to the book of Exodus, and I'd like to go to chapter 3, because we're going to, at this point, pick up. Now we're really going to get into our story today. Now we know Moses goes up, God introduced himself, there's various haggling. Moses says, I'm really not the guy for this job. Besides, I'm not very good at speaking. All this sort of stuff, made all kinds of excuses. They got all that out of the way. God explained the name that was supposed to be used when the children of Israel asked. And this is going to become somewhat important in the story. Okay, but what I want to get down to is finally, we're going to get back to that commission of Moses. I want to get back to that commission of Moses. So let's look in chapter 3 at verse 19. Because here God has told him, that he's heard the cries of the children of Israel, and he's going to send Moses there. Moses is now sort of resigned to the idea. And here's what he tells him. He tells him that he's going to take them into the, bring them in the land. He says, but, and he says, and he says, go to the children of Israel, and they will, it says that they will hearken to his voice, okay, and the elders of Israel, okay, and the king of Egypt, and go to the king of Egypt, okay, and you shall say unto him, the Lord God of the Hebrews has sent us, okay, and now let us go, okay, that we may go into the wilderness to sacrifice to the Lord our God, or as it's translated, if we were to actually translate the term, and this is going to be important, this is why I'm doing this, okay, the term, again, there are various pronunciations for it, nobody knows the right one, Yahweh, Yehovah, different people have tried to come up with it, but the actual translation means something like the ever-living one or the eternal one. Okay. And it says in verse 19, and this is pivotal, and I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not by a mighty hand. Okay. He will not let you go. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all the wonders which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. So he tells him already, he says, it's not actually going to work at first. It's not going to work at first. So we go on. He tells the people. He goes back to Egypt. He tells the people. And if we take a look at... Let's take a look at the end of chapter 4. Verse 29 says that Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all of the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses, and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord, or the Eternal, I'm going to use that term just because it's relevant to our story, the Eternal had visited the children of Israel, and that he had looked upon their affliction. Then they bowed their heads and worshiped. So they got it. It's good. He says, look, got this plan. We're going to come. We're going to go to the king. He showed him the tricks he had, the wonders that he could perform, the miracles he could perform. The children of Israel said, great. The elders of Israel said, great, good. So there should only be like half a chapter left before they leave Egypt, right? That's what it seems like. And I really think from the clues that that's what Moses kind of thought, as we will see. Okay. So now, beginning of chapter 5, here it comes. All right. We're going to start formulating our statement of why we are here today. Okay. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, here it is, the famous, thus saith the Lord, God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness. So notice he gives the request or demand in this case, but he gives the rationale that they will hold a feast to him. So there's the first part of the statement. Why are we here today? We are here to hold a feast to this eternal God. And of course, Pharaoh said, who is this eternal God? Pharaoh didn't know any eternal gods. All the gods of Egypt were actually created. They were created out of this amorphous mass, this chaos. Kind of the general mythology of all around the Mediterranean at that time was that nature created God, the gods, not that God created nature. This was a totally foreign concept to them, and one that he didn't recognize. Not only that, but remember, Pharaoh was a god king. He was a god to the Egyptians. And he was considered a god and considered himself to be a god. So he didn't want any threats from some other claimed god, especially some with some weird name that he hadn't heard of. He was not impressed. So what happened then is that he appointed He told them in, if we take a look at, for example, verses 5 and 17, he told them that they're lazy. They're just using this as an excuse to get out of work. And just for that, he's going to get them, okay, so that they don't come up with this sort of nonsense again. He's going to squelch this and make life difficult for them. So he tells them they have to make brick without straw, and they have to get their own straw, but it's just the same amount of brick. They're not supposed to reduce their workload, their production output with all of this. So, just cutting through this story, if we look at verses 19 through 21 of this, it says, "And the officers of the children of Israel saw that they were in an evil case, and after it was said that you shall not diminish anything from the bricks of your daily task. And they met Moses and Aaron, who stood in the way as they came from Pharaoh." And they basically said, don't do us any more favors. This was supposed to be a good thing. Look at this. It's turned out to be evil. So may the Eternal look upon you and judge, because you have made our savor to be abhorred in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of his servants. Put a sword in their hand to slay us. So Moses should have stood up right then and said, oh, no, remember, this is part of the plan. Apparently, maybe he didn't tell them that was part of the plan, or maybe he forgot. Maybe he got blinded with what he was told there back on the Mount Sinai, and forgot the part about it's not actually going to work at first. This guy only is going to respond, this Pharaoh, if things are really getting bad. Only when he is shown that he actually isn't the one in control will he finally give in. And so, moving on then with the story then. God responds. Moses goes at the end of the chapter there in verse 22. He returns to the Eternal and asks him why he's done this to the people, and why he's done it to Moses. He said, this is just not turning it out. He says, there's been no deliverance here. And then God responds. The true God, the Eternal God, responds at the beginning of chapter 6. And he doesn't start with an apology, saying, oh, yeah, there was kind of a glitch in the plans or something like that. No. God sees the big picture. He saw it way out. He knew exactly, and he spelled it out, actually, at the beginning. Then the Lord said unto Moses, he tells him that he shall see what he's going to do to Pharaoh. With a strong hand, he will get him out and drive them out of the land. And God told Moses that I am the Eternal. I appeared unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and so forth. And I've established my covenant, and I've heard the groanings of the children, and I, the Lord, I'm going to bring the children of Israel, all of you, out from under the burdens. It's going to happen. It is going to happen. So he explains all that. So often it seems that the good that God promises isn't coming to pass. And this is kind of a life lesson that we learn here along the way on this journey. In fact, sometimes things seem to be going in the opposite direction. And it can be a challenge to faith. Why is all this anguish coming on me? Perhaps my faith is in vain. My hope is false. But God's plan is on a much bigger scale than our short-sightedness. His purpose from beginning to end is at work. And God has the end in mind throughout the process. So, I'd like to go ahead now to chapter 7 and verse 1. Because now various things happen. God says, all right, let's bring on the, he says, now it's time to bring on the plagues. Basically through all this, he says, it's time to really get to work here, is what God says. Now we're going to get down to the real nitty gritty. And he says, the Eternal says to Moses, he says, see, He says to Moses, I have made thee a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. This is what Pharaoh understood. He didn't understand things he couldn't see, gods that he couldn't see, that there weren't statues there, there weren't real things, gods that weren't created. So Moses is going to be that god. And there we have Pharaoh on the other side, this unbelieving one who represents the world, remember. Pharaoh represents the system of the world. Therefore, he represents Egypt and the idolatry, the world society, human-devised, perverse, false, and ever-changing morality, new gods all the time, that says, I know not the eternal God, and I will not submit to a greater moral authority. So, the first plague comes on, and that's in verse 19. The first plague comes on. Actually, but before we do that, let's look at verse 17. Because here comes, actually, this is my next point in this. Actually, I wrote down the wrong verse, but we will get to it. All right. Okay. Anyway, so the plagues start to come on. The plagues start to come on, and the first plague is the Nile is turned to blood. So verses 17, 18, 19, and down, the Nile is turned to blood. And so it's turned to blood, and what happens when it's turned to blood? That is an affront to the gods of Egypt. The eternal God is now attacking the gods of Egypt. The Nile god was the Hopi, was the actual god of Egypt. And that was the one who represented Egypt. It was kind of a national god, sort of, in a way, because the Nile was represented Egypt. So the first thing that's happening here is all these plagues that are going to come are attacks on the gods of Egypt, the idols of Egypt. And so we have that. The Nile god is attacked. Does it do any good? No. Pharaoh still hardens his heart, ultimately. My purpose is not to go through all the plagues. I'm not going to go through all the plagues. It's a fascinating study. It's fascinating to go through and see which gods were actually being attacked with each one. That's for some other day. But I just want to go through this because I want to get to my main point. So, I'm sorry. I found the verse. Let's go back to verse 16. This was my second point. I simply was off by one digit. I was joking before services. Somebody was sitting in my chair, and we were joking about how maybe she changed my notes. She did not change my notes, by the way. I wrote it down wrong, but anyway. Verse 16, it says, Lord God of thus saith, say to the Lord God of Hebrews, says, let my people go. So here's the second rationale. Let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness, that they may serve me. Lots of translations have worship in place of serve there. So I like both of them. The word can be translated both ways. So we're here today to keep a feast, Moses said. Secondly, we're here to serve that eternal God. That's the second part of why we're here today. Okay, so then we get to the plagues. So the first one, that's against the Nile god. The next one plague, okay, in chapter 8, beginning of chapter 8. And I'm going to spend the rest of my time, people will be glad to know, probably, just in chapter 8. Chapter 8. And chapter 8 was against the frog goddess. Is against the frog goddess, who happened to be also a goddess of childbirth. And again, here they are inundated with frogs. They can't do much of anything about it because these are things they worship, and yet these things are driving them nuts. So the frogs come along until they stink and so forth. And finally, the situation is appeased. And then, once again, in verse 15, Pharaoh changes his mind and says, "No, nah, I'm not going to let the people go." He says, "No, I'm not going to do that. That wasn't bad enough for me." Now, keep in mind, up to this point, all this stuff had been affecting everybody the same way. It had been affecting the Israelites as well as the Egyptians. So the Israelites still weren't in a good place, we might say. They're probably still wondering, wait a minute, this really isn't getting any better for us. We're suffering right along with the Egyptians. And then we get to the earth god. We get to biting flies, the lice. We get to the lice or the biting flies. Different translations have it different way. And then, finally, in verse 4, we get to swarms of insects. The fourth plague, swarms of insects. Again, all on gods of Egypt, various gods of Egypt. And these are probably flying insects, not only the fly, but the beetle, which was greatly worshipped in Egypt. Okay, swarms of insects. And so, let's take a look now at, that would be verse 16 of chapter 8. Let me grab too many pages here. Verse 16 of chapter 8. There we are. All right, and then, and the Lord said, and finally, in verse 20, oh, and then, of course, in verse 19, it says, just the end of verse 19, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them that the Eternal had said, as to what the Eternal had said. So again, Pharaoh hardens his heart with all of this. But we're starting to move towards a turning point here. Verse 20. And the Eternal said unto Moses, "Rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh when he comes to the water, and say to him, Thus saith the Lord, let my people go, and hear again, that they may serve me. And he tells him if he will not, he will bring flies upon them," these flying insects. So this is that fourth plague. Okay, and it's going to be terrible. But here's for the first time he says something. Look at verse 22. He says, "And I will sever in that day the land of Goshen in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there." And this is so that Pharaoh will know that he is the Eternal God. He is the Eternal God. So this is going to be different. And so he brings on these swarms. And this is so bad, as we see, read in the next few verses, okay, that Moses, it says that he did so, and there came grievous swarm of flying insects into the houses of Pharaoh and his servants and house of Egypt, and the land was corrupted by reason of the swarm. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron. Here comes the big break, finally, the big break, or so it seems. Here comes the big break. And he says, "Go sacrifice to your God." Now, I'm going to stop there. I'm just going to stop there. I know there are a couple more words in that. He says, "Go sacrifice to your God." This is the first time he says, "Okay, go. Go ahead. Take that pilgrimage outside of Egypt and go and do it. This has just been too bad, and I see that my people got hurt and your people didn't get hurt. So go. But he's got a caveat here. He says, "Go sacrifice, but do it in the land. No getting out of Egypt. Go ahead and do it." So this sounds like a pretty good deal, right? All said and done. At least he's going to let them do it. He's going to finally give them that time off, and he's going to let them do this. But he says, do it here in the land. So what's the problem with that? Well, there's a huge problem with that, and it has to do with two different religious systems, we might say, two different worldviews. And that is that, as Moses says here, and Moses said, I'm reading in my King James Version here, and Moses said, it is not meet so to do, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Eternal our God. Their form of sacrifice was an abomination to God, to their gods, to the Egyptian gods. Slaughtering lambs, for example, was horrible. There are all kinds of references, non-biblical, by various historians, Roman historians and so forth, about different things that happened when people accidentally killed an animal that was considered sacred among the Egyptians. I won't go into all those today, but it's interesting to read them in the commentaries about all these different things. There was one time when a Roman citizen accidentally just killed a cat in Egypt, and the people picked up and stoned that guy. And so Moses says, "We shall sacrifice to the abomination of the Egyptians." Okay, all right. Shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes? Will they not stone us? Remember, Moses knew Egypt. He had been a prince in Egypt. He knew the whole system. And this is my big point today. This is my big point. We're almost to the final part of our statement of why we are here today. To hold a feast to this eternal God. To serve and worship this eternal God. And there's a third clause that we're going to add to our statement, our purpose statement of being here today. And that is that he's reminding, Moses is saying, the morality of the Egyptians is totally different than what our God demands. Our God doesn't allow for this sort of thing. And what we have to do is anathema to them. And I would submit that is where we are today in a lot of ways in our journey with what's going on in the world, what's going on around us. Because there's a problem nowadays. We live in a way we used to live in Goshen, away from the rest of society. We're a small group, we're hidden under the radar, but now with the internet, with social media, with everything else, people know about us. People can know anything. And the problem is that, as with the Egyptians here, okay, the Egyptians were hypersensitized at this point to where they're looking for reasons to go after the Israelites. And this will just give them a reason. They're perceived as, and that's how the world is today. Our beliefs are seen as an affront to their idols, to their religious system, to their belief system. They're hypersensitive to our slaughtering of their, I call them the idols of wokeism, okay? Same-sex marriage, transgenderism, abortion up to the point of birth or child sacrifice. Intersectionalism, and the list goes on and on and on. They want to stone us, figuratively or even literally in some cases, for those sorts of things. Tolerance, they say, while being intolerant. They say tolerance, but they're really being intolerant with all of this. They don't really want tolerance. What they really want is for us to give in to their way. And I think that's what Pharaoh probably thought that he might be able to get them to do, was to get them to concede, because he knew that Moses knew that that wasn't going to work if they were to do their practices in Egypt. But let's finish this declaration. And Pharaoh said, okay, So Moses said in verse 26, we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians and they will before their eyes, and they will they not stone us? It says, we will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the eternal our God. And here's our final statement. As he shall command us. Or as others simply state, other versions, as he commands. So there it is. There is our complete statement. There is our complete statement. Why are we here today? We are here to keep a feast to the eternal God, not some passing idol. We are here to serve and worship that true God. And we can only do it his way, not the way of Egypt. So that's my point today. That's my point today. That is why I am here. And that's the declaration we are making when we come here today, on this particular day. We're making that declaration on those three elements. Why we're here and we're not somewhere else. Those who follow gods of their own making don't want acceptance. They don't want tolerance. They don't want even compromise. What they really want is endorsement and submission. It's always been the case. Every time they put up something new, they eventually say, oh, we just want to be accepted for this. And it's always a trap. It's always a trap. It's always no. They eventually want us to endorse and to promote. Acceptance isn't good enough. It never is. Pharaoh is always about power and, most importantly, control. And that must be complete and total. We should keep in mind that Pharaoh was a God king, just as many of our leaders imagine themselves today. And the idea of the God of Moses, the eternal, threatening his power to dictate and control what was right or wrong or proper was anathema to him. Making a statement before Pharaoh, that is why we are here. And this is my main point today. Before Pharaoh, his system, his perverse and ever-changing standards and so-called morality. And we're here saying, as Moses did, there is only one way we can do this, and that is the way of the eternal God. We must keep a feast unto him so that we can serve and worship him his way. We are making a statement that we cannot make concessions to the gods of Egypt. And for that matter, that is why we are here today, rather than a week hence, bowing toward the rising sun in the east with eggs and bunnies and other symbols of concessions to Egypt's idolatry. But our practices have always been at odds with the religious majority. That's, of course, keeping today as a prime example. Now we are at odds with society too, and will only get worse. We are increasingly seen as those whose practices are an attack on the gods of secularism, the secular religion of Egypt. So why don't we change and just give in? Because, as Moses stated, we can only do it the way God prescribes. And for that reason, we can't go with the idols, doctrines, dictates of the secular religion or any other religion of this world, of this Egypt. Some 3,500 years ago, Moses took a stand, and the eternal God acted to initiate the feast calendar, with two major events labeling the acts of salvation in the month of Abib, the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, with the big symbols, the blood of the lamb, which we celebrated with the wine two nights ago, and now with the unleavened bread of haste, getting speedily away from the sin of Egypt, and the bread that indicates that. So let's end where we started. Why are we here today? Observing the first day in the annual cycle. We are here to make a statement to Pharaoh, that is the world, to ourselves, to our God. We will keep his feast. We will serve and worship only the eternal God. We will do things only his way. We will only do it with purity, using the symbols he has described, namely, for this day, the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth.